Hey, everybody. You might want to join the Patreon, because in March, we're going to, like, ship you a mug. A fancy People versus Star Trek Voyager mug. Got art on it and stuff. So join our Patreon. The art's good. It's got our logo on it and a secret other logo on the other side that you'll only see if you join our Patreon. Oh, but we'll probably sell the mugs too. But they're free if you join the Patreon at any level.
Nice.
It is nice.
This is space. This is the final frontier. These are the cases before the court. Its mission, legislate strange new crimes, seek out new perpetrators and new defendants, to jurisprudently go where no law has gone before. This is the People versus Star Trek Voyager.
The People versus Star Trek Voyager is recorded in front of no one.
For the defense,
Captain Matthias Zapp Spurlock, on leave from the USS Restorative Justice.
Prosecution.
Director of Photography John Q. Continuum, Esquire.
Judge.
The Honorable Midnightian, later.
May it please the court, case on the docket is Case 406, The Raven. Stardate, unknown. Original air date, 10-8-97.
Order in the court. As is well known to all here, these proceedings are being broadcast to the heart of Eternia, so I expect a civil tone and a consummate air of professionalism. No rancor, no ribaldry, and not even a sniff of the lemongrass. The question before the court is this. Is Star Trek Voyager a misunderstood gem, or just plain, tawdry garbage? Now your opening arguments. Keep them brief.
Sucks. Thank you.
Well, that was brief. Captain Spurlock.
Your Honor, Raven is a big old step forward in Seven of Nine's journey to become more human. Because, as I always tell the therapist at my Federation Tribunal mandated psychiatric evaluations, there is nothing more human and normal than having persistent command hallucinations that prompt you to attack your friends and steal vehicles.
Now the evidence will be presented in the format agreed upon by the Fairfax Addendum to the Kittimer Accords. Audio recordings of three white guys interrupting each other. Play the holocron.
Beep, beep, beep. That's so Raven.
This episode is so Raven.
It is.
I contest it's not Raven enough.
More Raven? How dare you?
All right, the cold open begins.
Art class.
Wait. Star What's date. This episode called?
The Raven. Theravin.
Theravin. That would have been a cool name.
That's a really good D&D name.
It is.
Theravin.
File that away for later.
And people are like, isn't that just The
just
Raven?
Gave you that for
then
free.
You say, no.
That should have been Patreon-only content.
I know.
Can that be a Patreon tier that will make up D&D names for you?
Oh, my God. Yes, absolutely. I'll do this shit for free. Text me. I'm endless font of D&D names. Episode begins. We're back in Da Vinci's studio. We get a nice shot of a stone lion face. They're working with the clay. And Janeway's working with Seven of Nine, trying to get her to, like, explore her humanity, her creativity, her imagination, all that kind of stuff. But right out of the gate, they have a new outfit for Seven, and I will say it is much improved.
Yeah.
It looks like something a real person would possibly wear.
It's a nice conservative brown.
I hate it.
Why do you hate it?
Less sexy.
Because I like it?
Yes.
Wait, yes to him or yes to me?
Wait, what did you say?
I said because it's less sexy.
No, I think it's still sexy.
Oh, it's still sexy.
I mean, it's still a cat suit. Like, yeah. They're not obviously not going to abandon that. But at least it's, I don't know, maybe it's just the muted tone.
It's
and
more
how
of a maroon than a brown.
Yeah, it's more of like, it's like a mottled sort of maroon. Look at us, look at these three guys trying to describe color on a podcast. How's that going to work
sort
out
of
for
brown,
us?
Brown, like how brown stuff, you know, like sometimes you look at something that's brown and you're like, damn, that's brown.
That's a brown.
It kind of looks like the mine level on Sonic 2.
Like, this is like, it's very pixeled. Anywho, I just want to say, I think it looks better.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. I mean, obviously, they're still going to have, it's still going to have a very sexualized silhouette for her, but I don't know. Just for some reason, it works better for me. Just want to throw that out.
Well, then I think they're not, like, the camera work on her is improving.
They're shooting her like everyone else.
Like a normal person.
Instead of like always framing her where you see her whole
always doing a sweep shot from like her calves up to her neckline.
And they're basically talking about art and working with clay. And I love how Seven is like, this activity is truly unproductive. Time has been expanded, nothing more. And then you have nothing to show for the time. And I was like, man, now I'm thinking about all my artistic pursuits. Thanks, Voyager.
All of your professional goals.
I put in a lot of time, and what do I have to show for it?
Nothing. Nothing.
What?
Nothing.
Pretty judgy from someone who spends 12 hours a day regenerating, though. You know?
Fair.
Sleeping in your alcove, and then you want to judge other people's productivity?
Sleep is important. I mean,
yeah, but not 12 hours a day.
I don't know. That sounds kind
of
nice.
I do find it interesting that Janeway's coming in. This is the concept of relaxation. It helps my own efficiency to forget about Voyager for a while. And I'm like, I'll bet, girl.
Yeah. And she also says that she loves to sculpt and it helps her relax. Have we ever seen her sculpt before?
No.
This is a new hobby.
0%. Not once.
She's just gone in whole hog. So she's like that person. She's got the zeal of a recent convert.
That feels consistent.
Yeah.
For Janeway, she selects a hobby and then devotes all of her thoughts to it.
For 5 days.
For 5 days.
And then she doesn't go back to this holodeck simulation ever again.
Seven does ask why here in this simulation, and Janeway's like, well, we already built the set, so we're just going to reuse it.
Yeah.
Deal with it.
Yes, that's exactly what she said.
But they all say it's refreshing, a little disorganization, it's nice.
She broke the fourth wall and said, that's so Raven.
That's so Raven. And then she's like, well, maybe you could create your own holodeck program. And I was like, oh, what? That's a cool idea. I'd love to see what a former Borg drone would create as a holodeck program.
Fucking nightmare.
Yeah. But then she starts talking about
discarded pieces of corpses all over the place. What? You told me to do what my imagination told me to do.
Floating arms and like heads that sound like bells.
What if it was just weird and nonsensical to a human brain?
Like, yeah. Not even terrifying. That's what it would be.
Like, this is weird.
That's why it would be terrifying.
There's a vat of mashed potatoes and jukeboxes are floating above it.
I like what I'm hearing so far.
I can make whatever I want. Why wouldn't I make that?
Mm-hmm. Janeway makes the point that like this is the way to explore aspects of yourself, like imagination, creativity, fantasy. And Seven's like, are these necessary for the human mind? She's like, they're not necessary, but they are kind of. The human mind cannot exist without them. And then she starts talking about Da Vinci, who sadly we couldn't get John Rhys Davies back for. A quick cameo.
Too expensive.
He's a very busy man. He's far, far ahead of his time. He invented the airplane before the airplane was even possible.
I thought you were still talking about John Rhys Davies there for a minute when you said he's a very busy man and he's far, far ahead of his time.
He is far ahead of his time.
That's very true.
They're looking at the wing thing, which I think was a nice callback to Scorpion when Janeway's looking at the same model. And Seven has a moment where she's looking at the wings, and then she's being chased by Borg in her mind. We get a nice dream sequence of a raven's eye, some guy screaming, Annika! And then she snaps out of it, and Jamie's like, well, what is it? And she's like, I don't know. And I was like, you don't know? Like, this is the most transparent dream sequence ever.
We know. Can we yell through the screen and tell you?
She's never had a dream or a hallucination.
That's fair.
She wouldn't know what they are.
That's fair.
Though I did have a dream after I watched this last night.
Of
her having this flashback, and instead of her name being Annika, it was Bananarama.
You liar. You didn't dream that.
True story.
Banana. True story. Bananarama. Okay. As
red,
as, mercenary
banana,
as
Bananarama's favorite color was red.
As mercenary as your attempt to co-opt the deep mythos of our podcast, very well. Her name, her human name, is Bananarama.
Fact.
This is what you wanted. All right. So after the cold open, they come back and they're in sick bay and they're checking her out. And she's like, this has happened 3 times now. Just weird, disjointed images. I can't make sense of them. And they do establish that she's never hallucinated before.
Right.
But also what's most strange to her about this experience is that she feels fear, but she's not afraid of the Borg. Like, she loves the Borg. Like, the Borg are great. And then she keeps saying, each time I see a bird. And they're like, a bird? And this begins a running plot line because they wait till way in the episode to reveal what kind of bird for plot reasons.
Right.
But, and then we find out later she was keeping a journal of all these dreams and talking about the bird and describe the bird in exact detail. And I'm like, so at no point she didn't walk over to a computer and be like,
large black bird.
Large black bird.
She would know. She would know what a bird is.
No, she would know
what specifically that bird
was. I'm fine with her not recognizing an Earth species because we don't know that her family lived on Earth.
Right.
But I'm saying there's a database on the ship.
That's what I'm saying. That she's talked about in show.
Yeah,
about
she's mentioned that she spends time just browsing the database. Yeah.
So I feel like
maybe she typed in large black bird and it gave her crow. And
well,
she was
if
like,
she
good
was
enough.
Going alphabetical, she would have probably been through the bees already and seen what all birds are.
Oh, my God. So anyway, the doctor hypothesizes that... listen, Bananarama. You've had your time.
Fine. Go.
The doctor hypothesizes that your human physiology is reasserting itself, but also because of that you're mentally repairing, so some psychological symptoms are bound to manifest. These flashbacks could be a symptom of PTSD. And she's like, but I wasn't traumatized. I don't see the Borg as threatening. And he and Janeway just kind of look at each other like, okay.
You don't now, but I mean, you probably did when you were a damn kid.
A lot of your guts were ripped out and replaced with cybernetic parts. That was probably pretty traumatic.
Yeah. Well, here's another fun thing for you. It's a good time as any for you to consume physical food and liquids.
Not to put too much on you in one day,
is
but
there another
you have
kind
to
of
eat
food?
Now.
Non-physical
Never food. Take it to Mr. Neelix. He'll be able to get you what you need. I hesitate to inflict his cooking on you. And she's like, okay. And she wanders off. Or she starts to leave. Chakotay comes in. It's like, our guests have arrived. The aliens du jour we got to negotiate with.
The Beaumont.
The Beaumont.
Confederacy or whatever they are.
I think they're the
Beaumont Initiative. The Beaumont
Sovereignty.
Sovereignty.
The Beaumont Sovereignty.
That's actually kind of cool.
And we had talked about the end of the episode is like Janeway consoling Seven, like, you'll be all right. And she like touches her shoulder. And we had the conversation a couple episodes back about we thought that that it was a hoax or that Kate Mulgrew hated Jerry Ryan during this period.
Or something that had been blown out of
proportion. Blown out of proportion. And then we found out, no, that's pretty much how it all went down.
Yep. Yeah.
And this moment where she like touches her, I was like, oh. She hates her. Like,
there's a lot of contempt.
I think she's good.
Most
at like,
of the time, they're pretty good at hiding it.
No, I think she's good when she's just acting with her. She's just like, it's just like, I'm acting and you're just a person that I'm talking to. But when they had to like make physical contact, I felt the like,
See, that's why it was so hard for me to believe. And I assumed it was just sort of a, you know, fandom apocrypha. Because they're so good
they're
in
so
these,
good.
These early scenes they that they so, have together so in the good. Early part of season four. Props to them as actors.
Yeah. Well,
you know,
I think looking, watching it now, knowing
it's easier to spot now.
It's easier
know.
To spot because you're
clues.
Looking for it.
You look for
Yeah. I probably wouldn't have noticed if I didn't know that story. But knowing that, I was like, oh no, because like I can't pretend you're just a person that I'm talking to a character. It's fine. Yeah. I don't have to physically touch you.
Yeah. I mean, watching it the first time through when it was airing, you know, I don't think I'd note. I definitely didn't notice anything.
Oh
like
no,
that.
Wasn't something I was aware of at all.
Yeah.
Now we jump to the fascinating negotiation scenes that they have with the Beaumont Sovereignty.
I hate them. Can we pull the emergency brake and talk about the alien fashion?
What the hell are they wearing on their heads?
What?
We've gone back to
the best I can,
stupid head accessories.
The best I can come up with here is that they like sawed the top part off of like a home plate umpire's mask.
Yes.
And sort of bent some parts around and said, here, this is your alien hat. I'm trying to think like what was the source of this prop because surely that's not something that was designed and made from scratch.
No, it's that like neck thing that you know like a neck brace that goes around your entire head.
Oh,
maybe, but missing the neck part.
Okay,
I don't know.
And then
it looks really dumb, though.
And then the coats look like Talaxian fashion. They look like early Neeliks, like bad late 70s drapes or something.
I think I had a moment where, because there's kind of a mystery coming up where Seven runs off and goes into their territory and they can't figure out why because there's no Borg stuff out here.
Yeah.
And then I started thinking about, like, well, they've got the little sort of like the little like glass scouter eyepieces that they wear and they have the big head thing. I was like, wait, are we going for like a weird thing where like they were Borg, like a Borg crew crashed here thousands of years ago and they aren't connected to the Borg, but they've slowly evolved to be just shitty normal aliens?
I think it's devolve.
But that wasn't, I was reaching, looking for a connection for their weird look.
No.
So anyway, they're negotiating with the Bomar sovereignty because if they have to go around their territory, it'll add 3 months. But if they can go through, it'll cut 3 months off the journey.
Right.
And they're basically telling them, like, well, here's the terms of our agreement. You cannot exceed warp 3. Your weapons must be offline. No surveys. No attempts to explore. And Janeway, like,
how dare you break a fire. Well, they give them a route that's still going to take them a month. Anyway, yeah.
It's like this ridiculous loop-de-loop.
Basically, yeah.
And they're like, well, that's going to take weeks, if not months. And they're like, well, there's only 17 checkpoints at which each you must present yourself for inspection. And like, I'm like, oh my God. But honestly, I did start to dig this whole negotiation sequence because this is like the unsexy stuff that Starfleet has to deal with all the time.
Yep.
Right.
Because we're Starfleet, we can't just say, no, your ways are stupid. We're going to do this the way we want to do it.
Yep.
Because that would not be very Starfleet of us to do that.
Yeah, it honestly makes me wish on TNG they more often would have the aliens that are just kind of dicks. They're just being
they
difficult
be.
Because they
just
can
because
be.
Just because they can be.
Yeah.
Because they can be. There's no great cultural reason. They just suck.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
So then we go down to the mess hall.
Mm-hmm.
Neelix is excited that Seven has shown up. What an unexpected pleasure. She's like, I have the
Would
need.
Would you like to call me a piece of crap?
Please yell at me. I won't mind.
That's why no one freaks out when she throws him, because people throw him all the time on the floor.
He's clearly like, into it.
All right, this must be one of his abuse sessions.
All right, she says, like, I have the need to process solid nutrients. Here's this ridiculous list. He reads through it, and he's like, oh, okay, well, let's find something tasty for you. She's like, pleasure is irrelevant. But he wants to make her Chandra Cobb?
Was that a question?
I typed it down, but I was like, I didn't have like the subtitles on or anything.
Yes, so. Chandra Cobb.
Chandra Cobb. She's like, preparation is irrelevant. He's like, oh, but no, come on. Like, we got to think about your... Like, he actually has a smart thing. Like, look, you've never eaten before. We can't just be throwing like fried Chandra Cobb up in you. Steam it.
We're going to steam it for your sensitive stomach.
But he has a nice couple of lines there about how food is not just about taking in the nutrients. It's an experience. It's participating in shared tradition and all that kind of thing, which she wouldn't get that at all.
No,
so I actually do think that's kind of a fun exchange.
Yeah, it's actually a pretty nuanced way he handles all this. And then he's like, okay, and he's like, this recipe's my family for generations. And he's like, so you are Talaxian, species 218. And she's like, we added your individuality to our collective. He's like, oh, I hadn't realized that. And she's like, yes. Your dense musculature, they made excellent drones.
He handles this very well.
She does say they assimilated 39 of them.
Yeah, they just came across a random cargo ship, basically, and took
them. But still, I mean, if somebody walked up and was like, oh, yes, we massacred 39 humans, so we know all about you, you know. He handles it a lot better than B'Elanna would have, let's put it that way.
Yes. He takes her over to her table, grabs a flower, and then he's like, please. And she's like, please what? It's customary to sit while eating. And then I realized Jeri Ryan must be so fucking tired of standing in every scene.
Standing all the time.
She finally gets to sit. She's like, Borg, do not sit. And I was like...
Well, it also could be that in the previous suit...
She was incapable of sitting?
She was, yeah. Honestly, honestly,
they probably sewed her into
where
it,
where the
honestly.
Seams were, those pelvic ridge seams
just
were not there to accommodate.
If she sat down, it was just like...
Oh, man, that means, like, in between takes, you would have to go, like, just lean against a wall.
They put a stretcher behind her, and then they lean her back.
Put her on a net board.
Yeah.
And this next little sequence of him teaching her how to eat is great.
Yeah, I like
it. Like, he's not too paternal. He's not patronizing. He's very understanding. He's like, oh, use that and just put it in your mouth. Even though he used the like the shuttle into the shuttle bay metaphor, like she's a baby. And then teaching her how to swallow, and like it's kind of great.
He's clearly really enjoying this too. I mean, this is the kind of shit Neelix lives for. Yeah,
this is validating.
To shepherd you through a moment like this.
And then she swallows it. She's like, that was a curious sensation. I was like, yeah, I can't imagine like someone who's never eaten before.
Yeah.
Like, no, you just mash this up and then you just kind of do a reflexive muscle thing and it'll go down your throat.
Yeah, don't worry. This is all perfectly safe. Like,
it's like when a Q is human and he falls asleep. He's like, what was that? He's like, no, you fell asleep. He's like, it's terrible.
Then he's like, well, do you want me to bring you something else? And then she has a flashback where there's a screaming Borg. The Borg pod erupts. You will be assimilated. Resistance is futile. And she stands up and says that. And then she pushes Neelix down and then just walks out of the cafeteria.
I wanted there to be a line where after she says, what a puzzling sensation, he's like, ooh, we'll wait until about 8 hours from now. If you want the really puzzling part of the eating real food process.
Yeah, who gets to shepherd her through that experience?
Who's going to give her the heads up on that? But it's Star Trek, so we never talk about people going to the bathroom, of course.
They don't. They don't.
Yeah, they clearly do.
Not where?
Have you ever seen a toilet? Bathrooms on the ship.
Where?
Next to the sonic shower, which you also never see, but is referenced.
Fine.
People gotta poop.
People gotta poop.
Okay, so meanwhile, back in the negotiation scenes.
That's the children's story they give her when she needs to learn about it.
Everybody poops. They've tried, like, what about this course? Like, no, that takes you to the aggregate Mott Nebula.
You think they poop in the sonic shower?
Yes, that's what I think.
Have they grown in efficiency where they pee and poop while they take the sonic shower? No?
No, that would be... That's barbarian. That's just absurd that you would even think. It says more about you, frankly, than it does about the people of the 24th century.
It's true. That not only do mind. I pee in the shower, I poop in it.
I wish the train would come back through right now.
Choo-choo.
Oh, gotta dump it.
So they're like, well, we gotta go through this nebula. And Paris like, well, we could chart the nebula for you. And he's like, oh, your translator's malfunctioning. I'm like, I hate these people.
I hate them so much.
Then they get called up. Like, hey, 7 and 9 attacked a bunch of dudes. And they're like, all right, seal off deck 6. And then we get a shot of her just striding Terminator style through the hallways. The phasers don't do anything because her Borg shields are operational.
Yeah, that was one thing you skipped over, is her Borg implant pops out of her
hand. That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
And then starts growing more Borg implants, apparently. It's like, good God.
Yeah, which they never totally explained.
Nanites. She has nanites that are dormant.
Yeah, they reactivate.
They reactivate. So they did explain. Why I'm defending this episode, I do not know.
I don't know. You'll secretly love it.
I secretly love Star Trek Voyager. It's all a trap, a trick, a ruse.
A ruse. But anyway, I did notice that they make a point that she does not kill anyone.
No.
Like, she walks past them, she stuns them, she knocks them out, but she never actually hurts anyone.
She still knows whoever. She still knows everybody.
Yeah. And then Janeway's like, all right, change your phasers to a rotating modulation, but keep them on stun. Then we see her entering the armory.
Tuvok says, okay.
Oh, God. They're entering the armory. She comes out with the big phaser, the Type 4. Is that what that is? The big rifle kind of phaser?
I forget.
That's
I
think Type it's a, 3?
I think it's a
compression phaser rifle.
I forget.
Yeah.
Tuvok and his security team, they catch her out coming off a turbo lift. He's like, lower your weapon and stand down. And she just shoots them all and walks by. And Tuvok to bridge, we were unsuccessful. She makes it to the shuttle bay. There's a force field. So she uses the transporter control to do site-to-site transport. And I do appreciate, as often as this has happened, someone leaving the ship and stealing a shuttle has happened easily 5 times on Voyager. At least this time they're showing their work.
Yep.
It wasn't just like, she's gone, we don't know how she got off, you know.
This reminds me, this is very reminiscent of that TNG episode that I don't remember the name of it, but the one where something similar happens to Data. Data mm-hmm. gets a signal and is like, I must leave the ship. And they go through this whole thing of like all the ships, him just systematically dismantling all the ship's internal defenses yeah. against this kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Just kind of slowly walking through the force fields and overriding command codes. And now he's in the shuttle. Yeah. It's almost like shot for shot.
Oh,
like
true.
That's the one where he goes and sees his
dad.
I think so. Yeah. He activates the Noonien activates like the recall code. Yeah. And he's just leaves.
Because he's dying or whatever. And he and his brother go.
Then they like seal the launch door. She blasts her way out. And like she's heading into Bomar space. She's gone. Then the next scene is the Bomar people losing their minds. He's like, look, we'll do everything in our power, but you unleashed a Borg into our territory. Like, we didn't unleash anyone. Then he says, I question your competence. I'm like, I'm surprised Janeway didn't just pull out that knife.
Just stab that motherfucker in the face. Her virus-killing
knife. I just stab him right in the neck.
Question your desire to continue living.
And they're like, then they start talking about, well, we're tracking her because we track everything that comes through our border. They're like, look, you must move 5 light years from our border. Any deviation will be seen as an act of aggression. Cut to, a team has been assembled to analyze Borg Bay 2 because they're trying to figure out anything they can.
What the hell happened?
What happened?
Yeah.
And then, like, B'Elanna is like, well, Harry, you're taking this kind of hard. And he's like, what's that supposed to mean?
I don't love her.
I don't, like, love yes, her.
And she's love, like, love, love, he's love, like, what do you love, think love, I mean, love. Harry? What am I thinking, Harry? And I'm like, wow. I love this has been a running joke for the whole crew for a couple of weeks.
Everything that Harry does immediately becomes a punchline.
Did you hear what Harry did?
This is Chakotay's doing.
So then there's some change in the beeps on her tricorder. She found something. It's a log. They're going to try to decode it because it's in Borg language. They realize that the Bomar have doubled the number of ships patrolling. And the doctor calls him because he found something he wants to see. Which basically turns out to be the whole, like, he scanned her transporter mm-hmm. record.
Yes.
And it shows that all of her nanites have come back on and Borg parts are regenerating. Even the stuff he just took out yeah. came back in like a day. And they're like, well, maybe this was inevitable. Like, she's always been going to be part of the collective. And Janeway says, I won't accept that. And then we get her and Chakotay on the turbo lift.
Yeah.
He's like, well, where is she going? I'm like, well, she can't be going back to Borg space. That's 10,000 light years. And Janeway's like, we're missing a piece of the puzzle. Mm-hmm. And like, we got to find her first. Oh, and then they get to sickbay, and they basically already kind of skipped ahead where, like, she's already regenerated 13% of her stuff.
Yep.
But I've made this magic hypo spray that will fix her. Just got to get to her and get it close enough to do it.
It only took me 15 minutes.
It's a genetic resequencer, and it shut them all down.
Then we're on the bridge, and they're talking about how can we get through the Bomar defense grid. And Tuvok, like, it's sophisticated, but not without vulnerabilities. And basically, the ship's too big, but a shuttle could get through. And
we got to send one person.
Got to send one person in.
And who are you going to send?
Tuvok. And Tom, this time. Tom flies.
I was going for Tom. Because if you wanted somebody that may have to fight and kill an entire flotilla of Bomar ships.
He could do it.
I did refer to this as the Murder Buddy Club.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
They're like, well, are we worried that Seven's going to adapt to the resequencer? Yeah. And then Janeway gives the, like, if it fails and you cannot do anything else, I give you authorization to stop her using any force necessary. It's like, damn, the kill order has been given to the murder team.
Okay. Just kind of shudders as the bliss washes over him.
Then we cut to Seven on her shuttle. She has another flashback of herself hiding in the wreckage because we're still pretending we as the audience don't know what all this is about.
For many weeks, if not months on the show, I have attempted to make sense of when they use the Herbie the Love Bug shuttles and when they use the cool new shuttles. And I don't usually dig into the Memory Alpha stuff too much before we do an uh-huh. episode, but my eye caught a little bulleted point at the bottom of the Memory Alpha entry. It's just, like, determined by when they can reuse old shuttle footage and when they can't.
Oh, okay.
This exterior shot of the old school, the TNG-style shuttle, was just because they had a shot from Maneuvers from Season 2, which was, like, mm-hmm. early Season 2. Mm-hmm. They're like, oh, if we can just flip it, we'll reuse that same exterior shot. And someone figured it out because the shuttle number is like mirror flipped on the side.
Okay.
That's just lazy.
So here I've been looking for some rhyme or reason this whole time.
No reason.
There is no in-world explanation.
Nope.
There's just not. Because I didn't notice later, because you have the new shuttle chasing the old Herbie shuttles. And I was interesting.
Yep. I blame LeVar Burton for this.
As well you should.
100% responsible for that decision. He is the director of this one, isn't he?
Yep. But anyway, she has the flashback where she's hiding in the wreckage. She comes out of it, and there's an armada of the Balmor Sovereignty. And they're like, Borg drone, we're going to destroy you. You've committed an infraction. And then she just fucking rams them. It's like, awesome. Because she has the Borg shield now on the shuttle, apparently. It just bounces off, just like pinballs off of them.
Right. Yeah.
Takes them out.
Right.
Meanwhile, a murder team is chasing. There's weapon signatures, Federation, and Bomar. And they come up to the little flotilla, and like they're adrift, heavily damaged. And then we've located the shuttle. I can't get a transporter lock. And Tuvok's like, beam me over there. And he's like, you want to beam in there? You don't stand a chance. He's like, I have the element of surprise.
Which he does not. Actually.
She's behind where he...
They're like 30 feet off the back end of her shuttle. She ain't gonna know we're here, man. She won't see us coming.
I'm in her baffles. But Tuvok says, do you have a better idea? And Tom was like, I guess I don't. She's charging weapons, like, energize. And then we get the battle that we've all been waiting for. None of us have been waiting for this. Tuvok versus Seven. And she nerve pinches a Vulcan.
She does.
The greatest insult.
Yep.
I'm surprised they don't talk about it later or anything. But I was like, oh, no.
She could have just laid the ball in there, but she dunked it right in his face.
Yep.
I mean, there is some, like, human malice in that. That's not just Borg.
Oh, this will offend you the most.
This will offend you the most. This will be the most painful defeat for you.
The commercial break, then Tuvok wakes up, and he's, like, trying to creep up on her, but there's a force field, of course, because she's not an idiot. And then he changes tactics, like, well, why have you left Voyager? She's like, I'm a Borg. And she's like, you're human now. He's like, she's like, for a brief time I was human. One tear.
For but a day.
And basically he says, like, what prompted this realization?
Almost copulated last week. That's how close I came.
And now I am Borg once again.
But she's clearly not, because if she was Borg, why wouldn't she? She would have just killed Tuvok while he started to assimilate him or something while he was unconscious. So there's not a lot of...
Yeah, she's changed. This is a good check-in of how she's changed since the
beginning. But there's not a lot of tension for the audience here in terms of, oh, is she really Borg again?
No.
Obviously she isn't.
No.
But they bring that up in a minute.
Yeah.
And basically, it turns out that she's like having these dreams, but also there's this signal that's calling her, a Borg signal, like a homing beacon. And then she talks about Vulcan, species 3259, your distinctiveness. And she starts to go into the Borg patter. And then she's like, no, I will not assimilate you. And then he starts talking about like her patience and her kindness and how she's demonstrating affection. And he's like, look, like this Borg signal is clearly a thing, but these hallucinations, does that usually occur? And she's like, well, no. And I can hear them calling me, and he's like, let's return to Voyager together, and we'll work this out. Then I just had a weird one-off moment. How does Seven's hair even work? Like, in the back, it's like tucked into itself. Like, man.
We have friends that could explain. Is that a French twist, I believe is what that's called?
I don't know.
I think so.
It looks physically impossible when I see it.
What are you mystery worried about? And majesty her back of long hair.
Yeah, let's talk about this for an hour.
Why?
The back of her hair, like, it's like tucked into itself in a clean seam. And I'm like, is it a wig? Is that just her hair?
No, I think that's her hair.
That's her hair.
But how does it work like that in the back?
Tell me the mysteries. You'll never have to know. You're never going to grow your hair that long. Or maybe you will.
Challenge accepted.
Yeah, do it.
Do it.
Okay.
I believe that is called
you are correct. Twist. It's called a French twist.
Good. Okay.
Okay.
Thanks, Google.
Yep. Now, how it works or how you get there, I'm sure there are YouTube videos that could tell us, but I'd rather just preserve the mystery myself.
Just live with the question.
Just follow the Twitter. We'll post a video of how to do it later.
Please do. So back on Voyager, we get a little voiceover from Janeway about she's retracing Seven's footsteps. And then Harry comes in, and Janeway's just sitting in her dock. And I'm like, so if, like, for example, like Paris disappeared, you would just go lay in his bed. Like, I'm trying to get into his headspace. Harry asks, like, am I disturbing you? He's like, I translated all the log entries. And she's like, they're mostly observations. Also, I come up a lot in them, he says, humble brag. Apparently, my behavior is easy to predict. And Janeway is like, huh, that's probably a compliment coming from her. And then he gives her the description of the bizarre images she's having. How she feels paralyzed, and that the bird seems to know her, and it fills her with fear. And they go through the description, and she's like, it sounds like a corvid of some sort. Maybe a crow or dot, dot, dot.
Raven. And she did look up information on her parents, and she would know that the ship was the Raven.
Why is that important? Now I know what to look for. Da,
da, da. Put a wrecked ship on a planet somewhere in the universe. That's what I...
Hey, but she knows what to look for now.
Yeah.
This is also like, I don't want to throw too much shade because every TV show does this, but this is a moment where the character doesn't say the answer. Because the audience that doesn't exist for them, it's not time for the audience to know.
Right.
Yeah.
But in a real conversation, like, now I know what to look for. But what's the answer? I'm still, like, Captain?
Right.
Captain!
Can you know. Why are you, that's weird that you ended our conversation that way.
She runs up on bridge and she's like, Chakotay, calibrate our long range, look for Federation signatures. And we're like, aha, this mystery that's not a mystery is about to be unraveled. Laying a course for Boma space. I'm tired of their shit.
Are they not just constantly passively scanning for Federation signatures? Wouldn't that be just something that...
That didn't bug me. Like, yeah. I think they're always kind of doing passive scans, but like you're getting so much information. I always thought of it as more like tell the person running the scanner like to look for these specific patterns.
Federation signature roughly from a time frame about 25 years ago, you know, old codes. Okay, fair enough.
So back on the shuttle with Seven and Tuvok, they're getting a signal from the lunar surface. And Tuvok's like, look, if you're afraid, then let's leave this place. Deactivate the force field. You don't need to go alone. Like, basically, I am your shipmate. Like, I'm your friend. Yeah. Like, let me go with you. And she does
pretty quickly. She's like, all right, cool.
All right, cool. I need help. And I think there's a nice moment where she's like, well, you don't even think this is real. He's like, I think the situation is not as it appears, but I'm willing to go with you to find out.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, Voyager to Paris. He's like, well, there's an M-class moon and there's some sort of resonance signal. We're on our way. I'm like, okay, this scene was totally unnecessary. But anyway, then we get Tuvok and Seven on the planet, and he's still like, if you wish, we can return to the shuttle. And they find a crashed ship, what a shock, that's partially assimilated and has been there for nearly 20 years. Dun, dun, dun. And she's like, this vessel is familiar. This is the signal. And they go in because they've already gone inside.
Which means her parents got out here without the help of the Borg.
What? Oh, you? What? That's okay.
Their ship. So, like, they made it that far out.
Yeah. So, one of the things that we had theorized was that they made it to the far edge of the Alpha Quadrant,
right?
And then they got by the Borg, and the Borg carried Annika Bananarama. That's not the case. They into made the it, Delta Quadrant.
That mystery is still open, but that line of inquiry,
which is closed. Fine, except I could have used a throwaway line here of someone being like, how in the hell did they get all the way out to the Delta Quadrant?
You kind of get one, and I'm going to help them out a little bit, because when she's talking about her parents later, when Janeway's telling her about them, she says, oh, yeah, they're actually quite famous. They had some pretty crazy theories about things.
Oh, yeah, that's just the writers building in, like, if we want, we have this, like,
They had this really stupid experimental, like,
warp engine. Only worked once and got them all the way out here, but couldn't get them home. Yeah.
Right. Or a way to, like, summon black holes.
Made an unstable wormhole that spit them out in the Delta Quadrant.
We get the flashback again of her father being assimilated by the Borg and shouting, Annika! And then we see the child version of her hiding. And that's when I had that question before of why they had a picture of her as a child that looked nothing like Jeri Ryan. I was like, aha, here's the answer. They actually have that child actor and they need her for this. Okay.
Da-na-na.
And I was like, oh, okay, well, now that makes sense to me. Thank you. Then she's like, Papa, can you hear me?
Bananarama.
Bananarama.
And then she's basically underneath the consoles. Like, it happened here. This is where I was assimilated. And this is the first moment, really, of this season of really feeling the impact of that. Because assimilation is kind of a science fiction-y type thing. And TNG did a lot of good work to make it really clear how horrible that process is and was. And this is, I'm glad they took the time in this episode. Like, no, this was incredibly traumatic, especially for a child.
Hardcore trauma,
And she gets up and goes and brushes off the Ebenezer Scrooge gravestone, which says...
Raven.
The Raven. Theravan.
That's so Raven.
Then she very quickly recounts, like, we lived here for a long
time. That's so Raven.
That's so Raven. They had some crazy ideas. They named their ship after old Disney Channel shows.
That's so crazy.
The USS Livin' Maddie.
She fills in the backstory of her life and her assimilation. Like, we lived here for a long time. Father did experiments. They were very important. We had to travel a long way, which is plenty of leeway later if they want to have a crazy warp drive or any wacky science thing that her parents were working on that's important later. The cake had 6 candles on it, one to grow on. So it had 7, I guess. And then she says, I hid. Maybe they wouldn't find me because I was small. They grabbed me, and suddenly we were somewhere else. And then I became Borg. And Tuvok's like, we got to get out of here.
cool story.
Cool story. Yeah,
let's get out. We should go.
Meanwhile, Jane on Voyager, the Bomar still aren't responding to our hails. She's like, target their weapon systems.
She has had precisely enough of Bomar bullshit today.
We see the Raven itself is getting blowed up by the attack of the Bomar. Tuvok and Seven running through the rubble. They're busy just running back and forth. And then they fall over and Seven's like, I am undamaged. And then they have to start digging to like get out of the ship before they get destroyed. Meanwhile, on the bridge of Voyager, they get a call over from the Bomar ambassador. Like, you've disabled 2 of their ships. An act of war. He's like, you've left me no choice. And he starts to say something else. He's like, in comms. I don't have time for this. It's like, yeah, boy.
meanwhile, this is that new season 4 Janeway we've been talking about.
Yeah, exactly. Then on the Raven, Seven and Tuvok, they team up together to move a big girder. And they get out just in time to look back and see the shot of it saying the Raven on the side of the ship, just in case you missed it. The ship falls into a crevasse. And then they get beamed out to the shuttle. Tom calls over like, we're on our way back to Voyager. And they say, there's another armada coming. 68 ships. Precisely. Not 69.
Not 69. Because then somebody would have had to, then Tom would have had to go, nice.
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 The Jane was like, take us out of Bomar space, warp 8. And she just looks over at Chakotay. He's like, well, there won't be any shortcuts this time. Have there ever been shortcuts for you guys?
No.
Oh, the gift. The gift was a shortcut.
Yeah. Yeah, what exactly are they? So they're going to just fly in a straight line out of Bomar space, like going back the other way? Or
go around, I guess. I don't know.
It's a little unclear.
At this point, I would just go through. Like,
just speed through it.
Just speed through it. Why wouldn't you just go warp 8? Why wouldn't you just go warp 8 the whole time?
Yeah.
I don't know. Anyway, final scene. They're back in Da Vinci's study. Seven is staring at the wings. And they establish that the doctor has adjusted her so she won't receive any more signals. And then they talk about how this was a place to encourage your imagination. And then Seven starts talking about, like, I don't like this because I start constructing scenarios. Like, what if we had not encountered the Borg? What if I had been raised by my parents instead of the Borg? And then Janeway says, well, there's information about your parents in the Federation database. They were unconventional. They had unique scientific theories. If you want to learn about them, and she's like, perhaps I will, but not now. Good night, Captain. And she walks off, and that's the end of the episode. Final thoughts?
I don't know. Watching the episode, I was kind of blah about it, honestly. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It just didn't fit together. And I think Josh and I were talking earlier about how it apparently had been rewritten about 8 times.
Oh, wow.
So I can kind of see that a little bit, maybe. I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. It's hard to pinpoint what specifically didn't work for me. Mm. I think some of the editing probably did it, like a lot of the dream flashback, whatever, trauma sequences like I felt could have been put together better. I don't know. It's weird. And also, I hate those Bomer guys.
Yeah. The Ba-Omar.
The Ba-Omars.
They put the sci-fi fantasy apostrophe needlessly there.
After. Yeah, I don't know. It's hard. I don't know. I was just on the fence about it, really.
So we talked about, before we started recording, we were talking about last week's episode of Revulsion, how I liked it when I finished watching it, and then the more we talked about it, I got talked into not liking it, or found a lot of things I didn't like. I sort of went the other way around with Raven. Like when I finished watching it for the rewatch purposes here, I thought, oh, that was interesting, but it was kind of a mess. And then as we've gone through it sort of frame by frame recording today, I found there's a lot of moments that I like, and mostly those moments center around the Seven of Nine and Tuvok. I'm glad that they finally got it. She's sort of been paired up, like she's had bits with Harry and briefly with Tom, and obviously she's talked to Janeway ad nauseum, but we haven't really seen her have any significant interaction with Tuvok. And I think, I mean, not surprisingly, the two of them are great together. And I think in terms of kind of where the story ends up going, this was something that it was smart of them to get this out of the way. To give her an episode that's all about her just figuring out, oh, okay, I did have a human family. I was something before I was Borg. I make a little bit of peace, or begin to make some peace with that, so that she has those toys, or the writers, I guess, have those toys to kind of play with later.
Right.
I'm glad that they did this when they did, instead of saying, we're going to wait two seasons, and then she's going to find the Raven and find out about her parents.
Yeah.
Because by then, she's going to have like new story baggage that she has picked up.
We would hope.
Yeah, and we wouldn't care, because like, we know Seven of Nine is who she is now, so I don't really care that much about what she was when she was a kid. So I think it was smart that they got this episode done and out of the way kind of early in her arc. And you know, it's entertaining. The pacing of it feels a little, I won't say off, but certainly different than what we're accustomed to, I think, with most Voyager episodes.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's because they had LeVar Burton as a guest director and he's kind of trying to do his own thing with it. I'm not really sure. But yeah, on the whole, it's a good episode, and I think kind of a necessary episode for Seven of Nine.
Yeah.
No, I'll definitely agree that it's definitely necessary. Like, it's a character-focused episode that needs to move the ball down the field for Seven of Nine and her portrayal. Also, like I said, there's sequences I just really, really like. The sequence with Neelix and her in the cafeteria.
Yeah.
And pretty much everything with her and Tuvok after Tuvok isn't trying to take her out anymore. They're just both examples of kind of playing up the concept that she is in many ways a child, and they are being good parents and role models and caretakers of her as she's going through this process, where they don't patronize her. They teach her what she needs to know to move forward and that kind of thing. I'll definitely agree that the Bomar and everything involved with them, they're super irritating, and clearly that was purposeful. And I like how, like I said, I like how unsexy they are. Every interaction with them, they suck, and we're never going to talk about them again. But like I said, it's kind of like the episodes we've talked about in the past. This is about one character's growth, and they're showing their work of how that character is getting from point A to point B to point C. So while I think this episode does have some flaws, it feels essential enough to Seven's portrayal that I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it when I watched it, and I enjoyed it more when we talked about it. Sometimes you just need connective tissue, and within that connective tissue of the narrative, that like you're getting very like I said, I really want, I keep highlighting it, but that scene between her and Neelix is like a great science fiction scene,
right?
That you would not get in many other properties, because it's slow. It's just about a character learning to eat, and it's super great, and it's also a good scene for Neelix, which I'm open to now that we have exorcised his demons of all that horrible Kes relationship.
Right.
I like them exploring more what he's going to be to the crew at large.
Sure.
Moving forward. But yeah, I like this episode.
You know, they're paying Jeri Ryan a lot of money, because she was already an established star. And I think because they're paying her so much, they wanted to use her. And an probably unintended but very positive consequence of that is that a lot of her sort of mundane interactions with people are given space to breathe.
Yes.
Like, we've got her, we got to keep her on screen as much as possible, so let's give her and Neelix 8 minutes sitting at that table talking about the purpose of food and him teaching her how to enjoy food for the first time. And I don't, that probably wasn't the plan on the front end. The plan was just to get maximize her screen time, you know, for the money they were paying her. But it helps the show. Well, and it gives it a different feel than a lot of other Trek.
Well, I think that is the plan for like the first, I don't know, 6 or 7 episodes of this season, just to get her in there and make it feel like she's supposed to be there and she's a part of this crew, a part of this family.
So they don't rush things.
They don't rush it. So they're in every episode. She's involved in, you know, either the A plot or the B plot, but she's there, you know, in every one of them.
It's just so Raven.
It really is. It really is.
Almost too much Raven. Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, it could stand to be a little bit less Raven, to be perfectly honest. But it's not.
Just dial it back.
It's so Raven.
Yeah.
The good citizens of the jury have reviewed the evidence. Gentlemen, your closing arguments.
Thank you, Your Honor. The Raven is garbage. I simply cannot get behind an episode with a plot that is entirely contingent on 7 of 9 not properly identifying a bird. That's a Raven. That's so a Raven. She would have looked it up in the database. And the Bomar suck. And I'm tired of being introduced to pointless asshole aliens whose only purpose is to provide fluff to an otherwise decent idea. This argument actually kind of makes sense this time. It's very bizarre. Also, this episode just sucks. It sucks. Thank you.
Captain Spurlock?
The Raven is a psychological thrill ride to the center of 7 of 9's fractured psyche. It has a plot, it has characters, and most importantly, it probably has some thematic overlap with the works of Edgar Allan Poe. I didn't catch any of that overlap because I haven't read anything by Poe since my days at Keiko O'Brien Middle School for the Botanically Inclined. But I'm guessing from the title that those references are in there somewhere.
Ultimately, the fate of this voyage is up to you good beings on the jury, but it is my august responsibility to make judgment based on the evidence and argument placed before the court today. After reviewing it all, I hereby decree that case 406, The Raven, is good. These verdicts cannot be appealed, crows. They are final and irrevocable within this quadrant space-time continuum and county, you damn crows! You freakishly smart birds! Court adjourned!
We know 16 words of English!
The People vs. Star Trek Voyager is recorded in front of no one. Space Judge Midnightian Later is played by Derek Adams. The Prosecution, Director of Photography, John Q. Continuum Esquire, is played by Jonathan Sparks. The Defense, Captain Matthias Zapp Spurlock, is played by Joshua Darnell. All episodes of Star Trek Voyager are presumed good until proven garbage.
Public Radio presentation. For more excruciating action, please subscribe on iTunes or wherever you seek podcast content.